This is episode number 291 with Peter Diamandis of the Founder Podcast.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now, the Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Omarosa, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Before we start today's episode, I just wanted to let you know that our goal at Founder is to help entrepreneurs succeed however we can by giving away high quality content in the form of interviews, blog posts, podcasts, YouTube videos, you name it. We put out so much content to help you. And another interesting project that we're working on right now is partnering with world-class founders like Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills like negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free trainings with founders like this, which is 100% free, just go to founder.com/free. Okay, so now let's talk about today's episode. What's going on, Founder fam? Hope you're having a great day wherever you are around the world. Feels like we haven't spoken ages. I don't know, maybe because I'm batching these podcasts. Not sure, but I hope you're having a great day and we've got an incredible guest. His name is Peter Diamandis and this guy is one of my heroes. Like, the way that this guy thinks is just absolutely insane. He thinks so big. It's extremely intimidating for me. But at the same time, after this conversation, I really felt so pumped up, so inspired, and just realized that I could just do so much more. And in this conversation, we talk about his golden rule that he always follows when he's prioritizing what to work on next, because he's got so many different companies, his mindset, his latest book, The Future is Faster Than You Think, How Converging Technologies Are Transforming Business, Industries, and Our Lives, and really what excites him the most about the future, and so much more. He has over 20 companies in the areas of like space, longevity, venture capital, education, and he's got a ton of interesting predictions that I think you guys are going to find fascinating. So I'm not going to ramble anymore. If you are enjoying these podcast episodes, guys, please do take the time to leave us a review wherever you're listening. And then also, like, we put out so much incredible free content. All I ask is that you share it with a friend. If you have any friends that want to start a business, want to grow a business, want to scale a business, or anybody that you think will get any sort of value from these podcasts or any of our content at Founder, we're on a mission to building one of the largest entrepreneurial brands online to help serve you however we can. All right, guys, that's it from me. Now let's jump into the show. I know we've spoken before, and it was actually around this time last year, which is crazy how fast time flies. But for those that are not familiar with you, how did you get your job?
Well, I don't have a job. I'm a kid playing and following my dreams. I think, you know, I grew up passionate about space. Apollo and Star Trek got me going. And I wanted to become an astronaut and then a space entrepreneur. My parents wanted me to become a doctor. And I went to medical school, make them happy. But at the end of the day, I ended up really becoming an entrepreneur to make my dreams come true. And I think there is a moment in people's lives where you make a choice. Am I going to follow my own, you know, my own drumbeat, my own path, or am I going to do things with other people on their drumbeat and path? And I was lucky. My first organization ever while I was at MIT was a student organization I started called Students for the Exploration and Development of Space. funnily enough, Jeff Bezos was the president of the Princeton chapter. I had such an incredible emotional experience of creating a vision of something and then starting it and then going and implementing it that I became hooked. And so that's what I've been doing all my life.
Yeah, wow. And we're going to talk about your latest book, The Future is Faster Than You Think, which is one of three books in the three-part exponential series. So you're really, really well known as someone that is very, very, I guess, proactive. And you know, you all the companies that you either invest in or the things that you do with the XPRIZE competitions, all around kind of emerging technologies and the wave of things that are going to happen and as technology is changing. So what compelled you to write this third book of the series, The Future is Faster Than You Think?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think people are scared of a future that they don't understand and don't know where it's going. And fear is a terrible place to come from if you're trying to create the future. And so this book is one that hopefully as people read it, will start to see where we're going across all industries in transportation, in finance, and insurance, and healthcare, and education, and retail, and advertising, and all of these areas, and to see that we're heading really towards a really hopeful and abundant future. Yes, there's going to be change. There's always going to be change. But the change that's coming is enabling people to build an extraordinary world. And so this book is one that is a hopeful look at the future, an abundant look at the future, and gives people a roadmap for where things are going. So as a founder and entrepreneur, you have a sense of, okay, this is the cool stuff I can go and create. Or as an executive in a company that's more of an old school company, you can say, hey, this is how I have to future-proof my company so it remains relevant and adds value in the decade ahead. You know, my purpose, my mission is to inspire and guide people to create a hopeful and abundant future for humanity. That's what I do. That's what I focus on. So that we're really, creating a world that we desire for ourselves and our kids. You know, as a, you know, many time founder of companies, and I love starting companies. That's what my passion is. You know, I believe that we're alive during a time where someone can make their greatest dreams come true, that we're going to create more wealth in the next decade than we have in the entire past century. So it's an amazing time to be alive.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Due to the power of the internet and everything that's going on, like, this is one of the best times to be alive. There's so much opportunity, more opportunity than ever. Would you agree?
Not a little bit, a huge agreement there. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's three parts in your book. Part one, Power of Convergence. Part two, The Rebirth of Everything. Part three, The Faster the Future. Love to talk about a little bit more about some of these parts. Let's start with the Power of Convergence.
It turns out that we're living in a time where it's no longer sufficient to be an expert in any one technology. You know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you could be an expert in one area, networks or sensors or 3D printing or the early days of AI. But today, the real action is the new business models that are coming out of convergence. What is convergence? Convergence is the coming together of 2, 3, 4 different exponential technologies to reinvent an industry, right? So autonomous Ubers are ultimately going to be the convergence of sensors, of 5G networks, of machine learning and neural nets, of Google Maps, of all of these different technologies enabling this future. And then out of the convergence of those technologies, a new business model, autonomous transportation. And then out of that comes amazing other business opportunities. I have a venture fund called Bold Capital Partners, and we invest in converging technologies that impact, you know, globally at scale. And we just had an investment in a company that I think is so cool. I'm having the co-founder and CTO close out my Abundance 360 conference this January. It's a company called Relativity Space, and they're focused on a convergence of robotics, 3D printing, material sciences, and machine learning. And they've dematerialized and democratized factory production. So they built this incredible factory. It's a virtual factory with a 3D printer at the end of a robotic arm that can print in aluminum and Inconel. And they're 3D printing entire rockets. And I mean, these are not just small rockets. These are large, you know, 10-foot diameter, 2.5-meter diameter, you know, I'm not sure what the height is, but to launch, you know, a couple of thousand pounds to low Earth orbit. And so ultimately, that 3D printer can print a rocket in 2 weeks. And then if there's something wrong, it can iterate and print a new version of the rocket 2 weeks later. In other words, there's no tooling that got produced that now has to be changed, right? This is a virtualization. And by the way, if they print enough rockets, now they can print a jet engine with that 3D printer, or maybe an airplane wing with that 3D printer. So this is a brand new game. And this book is a look at how industries are changing, right? We're reinventing education, entertainment, healthcare will be completely transformed. And the opportunities for founders, for young entrepreneurs to play in at a scale that was only possible by the largest companies is amazing.
Yeah. You know, I know you talk about many different industries in the book and the rebirth of everything. I'm curious around the business component, like in the future, because like more than ever, I believe that the barrier to entry to start a business is easier than ever. What do you think is going to change?
Yeah, it is easier than ever. It used to be, I mean, I'll give you the example I love and I talk about in the book on the chapter of reinventing entertainment. We went from a scarcity mind, we've gone from previously a scarcity mindset in almost every industry to an abundance mindset. So in entertainment, the scarcity mindset used to be Hollywood studios. Hollywood studios controlled everything, right? A studio was the only place that had enough money to make a motion picture. And it signed the biggest stars, right? Marilyn Monroe worked for this studio, not for the other studio. And they had all of these sounds, you know, the stages and the cameras and the film. And so they were the only ones who could make entertainment, or the TV networks, you know, had owned a Channel 2 or Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 7. And those were the networks. What's changed is now we've gone from that scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset, where now there are millions of YouTube stars. We've democratized the Uber creator, right? And now my kids couldn't care a damn about studio created content. They are, you know, focused on YouTube content. So the same thing's going to happen in every industry. So the barriers are coming down. And it's really, what value do you add to a person's life? How do you contribute to them? How do you make them smarter, happier, more passionate?
Yeah. So if the barrier to entry is getting lower and will continue to get lower, and all of these areas and industries are being democratized, does that mean that competition will be fiercer for attention?
There will be fiercer competition for attention. I think we see that right now. We are seeing a thousand, 5,000, 10,000 YouTube channels, so to speak. But what's also happening is that we have the ability to have a long tail of content where I, as an individual, will be able to have just a lot more options and find that thing that I want. So, for example, one thing we talk about in the book is we're all going to have a version of an AI, a version like Jarvis from Iron Man. I love that model. I love that concept, that vision of a personal AI an AI software shell that is, you know, wrapped around you, that you give permission to read your emails, listen to your conversations, look at your blood chemistries, you know, through your augmented reality glasses. It knows what you're looking at. It knows what you pay attention to. And you might come home and say, you know, I'm feeling kind of down. You don't have to say that. Your AI knows that already. But you say, can you cheer me up? And your AI will find content that you might not otherwise find that's the perfect content for you, right? Oh, wow. And so we can't, our brains are not able to parse through 1,000 different options, but an AI can. An AI knows what you've seen, what you've enjoyed, and can deliver to you something that's, the term I use is, you know, automatic and magical, or automagical in this regard.
Yeah, interesting. So it kind of makes me think, like, for people that are listening now that already have a business, let's just say they've recently launched it, or, you know, they're a couple of years in, so they've got product market fit, they're getting customers, getting sales. What should they be thinking about around building a sustainable business for the future? Because, and I'm sure you can attest to this after starting, you know, over 20 companies, being a founder for a very, very long time, to build anything of true worth and significance really takes at least 7 to 10 years. What can people do to build a sustainable business, keeping that in mind and keeping the future in mind?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, people have this fallacy that things happen instantly, that in fact, it's not the way it is. Things move extremely slowly, and it does take sometimes a decade, right? I jokingly say a lot of my best successes were overnight successes after 11 years of hard work. And you're lucky if you have a product market fit, and your job is to continually be listening to the customer, building your brand, iterating, getting data and listening to the data. So we're living in a world today where you can run experiments and you can gather data and you can listen to the data and to through that data to the customers to go bigger and better. It's also important for you to understand where the world is going. And in the edutainment industry, right, understanding where we're going with AI, how much of this is going to be served up by Alexa or Google Now, how much of this is going to be in VR or AR. It's really educating yourself constantly and asking, you know, where might this go next? It's not becoming complacent with what you're doing and how you're doing it. But again, most importantly is, what does your customer want? And a lot of times your customer may not know what they want. You can ask, but a lot of times it is actually, it's just running constant experiments. If you think about the most amazing companies in the world, you know, Amazon most definitely is one of those. And, you know, Amazon will run thousands of experiments per year. I think that's ultimately critically important. You've got to be constantly iterating and reinventing and reinventing, remaining, you know, true to your core, because you don't want to sacrifice your core, but constantly looking at what else can I create. I mean, there are people who bet it all over and over again. Right, Elon Musk is one of those individuals. You know, he built on at SpaceX, he built the Falcon 1, got it working, and then canceled the Falcon 1 and started building the Falcon 9 only. And now, you know, announced he's going to cancel the Falcon 9 and only focus on Starship. So it's, there is a point at which, you know, you burn your boats as well when you identify what you want to do next and focus on that. Hopefully you've got enough revenue and enough of a robust organization that you can do that. But if not, I think it's the trapeze act, where you're running your company, doing the best you can, driving the revenue, meeting your customers' needs, and then running the experiments to get the data to decide where you're going next.
Yeah, it's a very difficult balancing act, because if you follow or listen to a guy like you, Peter, you're very, very, you know, ahead. This is what's happening. This is what's coming. You know, singularity. And a lot of people have just kind of got their heads down, you know, and focusing on growth with something that they've found, or, you know, like, they, you know, how do I generate sales, or they found my product market fit, or, you know, they're just trying to grow. And, you know, a while ago, I read this fascinating book. It was incredible, by Jim Collins, Great by Choice. And he talks about this concept of firing bullets, not cannonballs. And basically what he says is, like, you know, you've got, what you have to do is you have to follow this 20-mile march, where whatever you're doing, like, your company has to stick to that core, like your core business. But then you shoot these, like, little bullets, like little tests, to see what's working in the market, because you want to ride that S curve, because every business has this S curve where you can kind of ride that wave over numerous years. So by the time that your core business starts to decline, you've already got the next product, the next revolutionary service, the thing that is not going to diminish, like, over the next 5 years or in that point in time. You've got that sustainability. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree 100%. You know, there are very few companies today whose revenue engine was their original business. Right. Microsoft is not making their money on the disk operating system anymore. They were able to use the revenue driven by that to run experiments on the edge. And I think these experiments are the equivalent of those bullets. And they identified new product market fits in adjacencies. So Amazon, for example, is the perfect example here. Right. Starts by selling books and then starts verticalizing by becoming not only just selling books, but publishing books, and then getting the business of delivering books, and in the air cargo business, and then the music business, and then the television business, and then in the production of television business, and then in the food business, and the healthcare business, et cetera, et cetera. So they're moving up and down the vertical chain and then into adjacencies using their core capabilities. And so this is the same thing for any company, but you need to get your core business profitable, fine-tuned, understand what you have as your assets, and then move your march up and down, left and right.
Yeah, I guess the tricky part is that new stuff is fun and it's exciting, and focus is key sometimes.
Yep.
How do you know when, like, you can kind of step a little bit out and start exploring some of these new technologies and the way that things are going to go? Because, you know, in your latest book and your series of books, this is really fun. This is really exciting stuff. But yeah, it's kind of like a timing thing. Like, even myself, you know, our company's doing okay. We have around 40 staff. We have a lot of different things going on. But I myself, I'm still thinking around core business day in, day out.
Yeah. So listen, that's 100% is you've got to have your core business solid. And when you have it fine-tuned, when you know that when you understand your business, I think once that is, that level of confidence and understanding is in place. And then the other thing is, as the CEO, you need to be honest about what excites you. If you're getting bored with your business, maybe it's time to start to reach out. I mean, as a founder, you know, I find a responsibility to bring extraordinary passion to the table. And that passion comes from excitement and creativity. You know, the challenge becomes, and I suffer for this, and many folks do, where you become scattershot, where you're doing too many things. But it's a balancing act.
Are you a very disciplined person?
I am extremely disciplined in certain core areas. I'm disciplined in my morning routines. I'm disciplined in how I respond to people and make yes or no decisions on my time. I am not as disciplined about doing less. And that's part of my challenge, is I spread myself a bit thinner than I should, because I get excited about this or that opportunity.
Yeah, I could imagine that. Like you must have so many ideas, especially in the world that you play in, that you want to execute on, and all, like, because you know the way that the technology and things are going to change over time, and you kind of have this playbook, right, in everything that you do through Singularity University, and you've got so much going on. How do you know what to execute on?
Yeah, I think that's again, it comes down to my personal passion. If I'm interested in something from a perspective, that's great. I might have my venture fund look at that for an investment. If I'm passionate about something, it's like, oh my God, that is aligned with my massively transformative purpose. Right. So doing anything big and bold in the world requires huge amounts of energy and time. You know this, and every founder ultimately knows that. There are very few overnight successes that were easy. Right. I was just talking to Joe Gebbia, one of the founders of Airbnb, yesterday. He's the chief product officer there. And he's going to be one of my speakers at my CEO summit called Abundance 360. Folks can find out about it at a360.com. And I've got Joe Gebbia, and I've got Chad Hurley, who was the founder CEO of YouTube. And we're going to be talking about, you know, the realities of starting something that has global impact. And, you know, Airbnb is a perfect story of the ups and downs, the lefts and rights. You know, people forget Airbnb is 11 years old. You know, it's overnight success after 11 years of hard work, and it died 1,000 deaths in the process. So ultimately, unless you have a level of passion for something, and it's not about just making money, it's not a get rich quick scheme. Anything I've ever gone after just to make money, I have just I've killed it. I let it go because it was not my purpose. But I become clear about what my mission and purpose is in life, right? So my mission, my massively transformative purpose, is to inspire and guide a hopeful and abundant future for humanity. And so I think about that. I say that, you know, at least 10 or 20 times a day in the back of my mind, or in my morning, or in my shower, or my incantations, in terms of, you know, I get the most I can out of inspiring and guiding people. So the work that I do with the XPRIZE Foundation, with my Abundance 360 digital community, with Singularity University, all these things are about inspiring entrepreneurs and guiding entrepreneurs. Why? For them to create a hopeful and abundant future, right? Because ultimately, creating hope and abundance in the world is what is going to make the world a healthier, happier place, and allow us to really navigate the next couple of decades ahead.
Yeah, your purpose really resonates with me, and I align a lot of that with the work that I do. So I'm curious around, like, you said that you started companies before just to make money. I'm curious just to dive a little deeper on that, because I think that's a common trap that people do fall into. But at the time, sometimes people do start companies maybe with the idea to make money, but then they fall in love with the problem, and they fall in love with the business and the model. You don't really strike me as someone that would have ever done that, to be honest.
They were never companies that came to fruition because I killed them. It was like, if I saw something that was an opportunity, it's like, oh, that would be cool, and I'll go and think about creating a business there, because I love the art form of creating a business, of writing the plan, of getting the economics, of figuring out the product market fit and so forth. But after some time, it's like, you know, that just isn't meaningful to me. And I killed that, right? And ultimately, I've learned to follow my heart more than anything else. I think, yes, of course, I've started a number of nonprofit organizations, and you know, probably 2/3 of my companies, 3/4 have been for profit. And I'm clear that making money is fundamental to, you know, you need to have a profit is not evil. Profit is a way that you can measure that you're adding value to people's lives. And so creating something that is profitable, and in fact, some of the most successful, what I would call philanthropic companies in the world, are for-profit companies because they've got a business model that generates revenues that allow them to become vibrant and grow and have greater impact on the planet.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That was something I was told early on, like the amount of revenue your company generates is a byproduct of how well you're serving. So talk to me around, I guess, mindset. People would look at you, Peter, and be like, wow, like this guy's like crazy. And maybe maybe find that hard to relate. Like, what do you do to cultivate your mindset? Have you always like thought this big?
So again, a lot of my origin by luck, by circumstances, whatever it might be, was a result of the Apollo program and Star Trek. I was born in the 60s. Apollo showed me what was possible. I mean, pretty magical to be having the human race going to the moon and actually pulling it off over and over and over again. And then here comes this, I love calling it this scientific documentary called Star Trek, that is showing us where humanity is going. And there's this hopeful vision of the future. And I bought in. I became super excited about that. And my blueprint for life, which was we're going to the stars, we're creating this amazing world ahead, didn't actually line up with the circumstances I was in. Applying for NASA, trying to go to medical school, mostly make my parents happy. And so when you have whenever you have a misalignment between your blueprint for life and what's actually happening, you can either become sad, angry, pissed off, or you can change your blueprint or change your circumstance. And so I did effectively both of those things. My blueprint was one of going through NASA or going through traditional. I was like, screw that. I'm going to create my own mechanism for getting to the stars. And then I started my own changing my circumstance, which is I started starting companies in that arena. I started this group called SED, Students for the Exploration and Development of Space. I was the chapter president at MIT. I became the national chairman of this organization. You know, Jeff Bezos was the Princeton chapter president. And SEDS was amazing. I learned all about starting companies and organizing people in this nonprofit, in this after school, after college program. And then I started a space university and I started a rocket company. And, I had successes, I had failures, but I became enamored with the idea that I'm not going to accept what is, I'm going to create what I desire. And I think that the luck I had in the early days of creating my, my global student space organization, SEDS, gave me the wherewithal to know that it was possible. And I became addicted to that. And, as a fellow entrepreneur, you can see and feel, as many listening can, that, being an entrepreneur, being a founder of a company is an amazing thing. It's hard. And it's super rewarding. And once you've done it, I don't think you ever want to do anything else. So that's what drove my mindset. And then, I've created mindsets. And I think a person's mindset is like the most valuable thing they have by far. It's not their assets. It's not their connections. It's their mindset. You take a amazingly successful entrepreneur like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk, and you take away everything from them, but allow them to keep their mindset, and they are going to regain their wealth. They're going to regain their incredible position on the planet. But if you take away their mindset, they're lost. And so be protective of your mindset. I don't watch the news. I don't pick up a newspaper and read the newspaper. I don't want the, you know, the fear mongering of CNN or Fox or any of the newspapers shaping my mindset. So I'm have an abundant positive mindset. I look at the data. I have an exponential mindset. I understand how rapidly things are moving and the power we have. I've got a longevity mindset. I'm very clear about, you know, the ability to create vitality and longevity in our lives. So anyway, that's what I think about mindset.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Someone once told me that if you think that you can do it in your mind and you're already just 100% convinced, like you just know that it's already done, that's like half the battle. Like that's half the battle. It's already done. Do you agree with that?
Like 100%. Yeah. If you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right. You know, if you believe you cannot do something, you're screwed. You're never going to do it. I mean, there could be luck. There could be other circumstances, but honestly, there is extraordinary power in a person's mindset. When someone comes to me and with this mindset of they know they're going to do something, people love supporting people who are who've got that level of conviction, of this positive mindset. You know, think about the people that you like to hang out with and support, not people who are cocky or are irrational or just, you know, ridiculously exuberant, but a sense of belief and confidence. You've done the work, you've gotten the data, you know that this is possible from first principles thinking, and then you've executed before and they believe, okay, I believe in this person and I'm going to back them.
Yeah, no, I know exactly the kind of person you're talking about. So you mentioned first principles thinking. Just for the audience, can you just give some clarity on that?
Yeah, first principles thinking is a really important concept. You know, one of the people that has done the greatest tribute to this is, again, Elon Musk, where when he set out, and I knew him during this time, I met him back in 2001 when he just sold PayPal to eBay, and he was becoming passionate about space. And long story, but when he goes to start his first rocket company, he looks at this from first principles, which is what should be possible? How cheap should it be possible to build and launch a rocket? What is possible with reusability? And when he convinced himself of what was possible, he then was able to create and build the company and raise the capital and ultimately completely revolutionize the launch industry. And the same thing true from Tesla and building that automotive company. So you have to look at what your vision is and understand what does physics tell you is possible? What is the cost of materials tell you is possible? What are the trend lines, right? So first principles thinking should tell people that we're heading towards an all electric economy. We have 6,000 times more energy coming from the sun. It hits the surface of the earth every single day than we consume in a day. And that the look at the trend lines at the cost of installed solar and wind is plummeting, and that the cost per kilowatt hour is dropping. So you can start to say, okay, I'm going to predict that in 5 or 10 years' time, this is going to be possible. And I'm going to skate to where the puck is going to be, not what it is right now.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea because sometimes when it's already done in your mind, it can be easier to know that you can do it if you can see somebody else doing it, or you can see another company doing it, or you see it's been done before. But if it hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, this is the breaking of the 4-minute mile. This is the company that pulls something off that is extraordinary. And then people say, why not think about that? So why didn't Hyatt and Hilton and Intercontinental come up with come up with Airbnb as an idea, right? Why didn't Avis and Hertz come up with Uber as an idea? You know, a lot of times it's the quality of the questions you ask yourself. So I'm always telling my 8-year-old boys, ask great questions today. And I'm telling CEOs in the, you know, the boardrooms I'm speaking to, you know, it's more important the quality of the questions you ask, not what you know.
Yeah, I think that's a really great quality that a leader possesses. Like the better the questions, like really asking great questions.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Look, we have to work towards wrapping up. Like, I'm really enjoying this conversation. Could talk to you all day, man. So let's just kind of swing things back to the book. Just coming back to the book, I'm curious around, I guess, what is the area that you are most excited about personally that you think is going to change?
So first of all, thank you for bringing back the book. For those interested, futurefasterbook.com is the website. And we have, you know, huge amounts of bonuses for folks who do a pre-order for the book, including you'll get a copy of my last two books as well, Abundance and Bold. I'm doing a day-long video webinar with Ray Kurzweil and Stephen Kotler and myself. There's just a ton of stuff. There's $750 off of my digital course. So it's 50% off for people who buy, you know, certain number of books in advance. So futurefasterbook.com. The stuff that I'm super excited about, and I'm excited about all of it in the book. I mean, and I go industry by industry, right? So there's a chapter on the future transportation industry, which is between Hyperloop, where I was a founding board member, Uber, Elevate, the, you know, flying car companies, the autonomous car companies, drone deliveries. We're completely reinventing where we live and where we work and how we spend our time, the future transportation. I think as a father of 2 8-year-olds, I'm super stoked about how we're going to reinvent education, which hasn't changed in, you know, 100 plus years. Our educational system right now sucks. It's built for an industrial age where, you know, we had to teach certain skills and then the bell would ring. And then it's like an assembly line. The students move to the next part of the assembly line and the next part, and the next part. And we're teaching to the test. And I mean, when's the last time anybody ever, you know, factored fractions or looked at a multivariable equation? We teach stuff in school that you never use the rest of your life. And like, why do we do that? Why don't we teach stuff that is actually useful and valuable? Like, finding your purpose and learning about empathy and how to tell a great story and how to lead. And, you know, these things that in a world of technology is critical. And then I have two chapters on the future of healthcare, which I think is going to become massively transformed this decade. I think the healthcare industry is lumbering and going to collapse under its inefficiency and weight. And something much more beautiful will come out, probably led by entrepreneurs, by companies like Apple and Google and Amazon, right? Tim Cook just recently said again that decades from now, Apple is going to be known for its contributions to health, right? They get it. That's where they're going.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. How do you just do you do much like flat out research for these kind of stuff, or do you just know it?
100%. Because I'm reading every day. I've got, I literally have built, and I'm going to be releasing it soon, an AI engine that is my search engine. It's my who. It is doing research and bringing to me content on the subjects that are where it looks for convergences of multiple exponential technologies focused on food or health or education or insurance, whatever topic I want. And it goes and it finds those and it brings them to me and summarizes them to me. So I have incredible engine working for me. And I have a team of a dozen who do this. And I'm constantly reading all the time. And I have my venture fund. We have $250 million that I'm investing in exponential technology. So I see a lot of deal flow there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was going to say, like, the people that like run in your circles, you would see the emerging tech that's coming through, right? And what's possible. Was really curious because you seem like so far ahead. But a lot of this stuff, it feels like it's still so far away.
Well, you know, it feels that way, but it's not. We forget how extraordinary the world we're living in today, right? It's like watching something boil, or, you know, how can I say it? I mean, we forget that our cell phone, you know, you, like I, probably just bought a new cell phone in the last year. Your old cell phone's probably sitting in the drawer and you think nothing of it, but that's a friggin' supercomputer from 20 years ago that the KGB or CIA would have, you know, abducted you to get. And we just forget how amazing the technology we have to change the world is. And, you know, we just, I don't know. I think we take a lot for granted, and we just sort of accept it as the new normal. But all these things are happening very fast.
Yeah, it's a really good point you make. If you look at like the past 5 years of technology, how things have changed, you know, people weren't ordering Ubers. You don't even really need a car anymore, do you?
No, you don't. And when autonomous vehicles come online, they're going to be four times cheaper than an Uber, and four times cheaper than owning a car, and far more efficient. You'll turn your garage into a spare bedroom. You'll turn your driveway into a rose garden. And your AI will always make sure you order your Uber. Your AI knows where you're going next, and it will have one show up for you before you know you need it.
Yeah, crazy. Look, a couple of last questions and we'll wrap. So sometimes when it comes to this stuff, you read stories around it being too early. You work on, you know, kind of people working on designing the future, you know, products and, you know, industries that are changing, and there's an element of luck to it and timing. What's your take there?
There is an element of luck and timing, and I think it's important for people to realize that. Bill Gross, who runs Idealab, has a beautiful TED talk on this subject, in which he looked at 100 companies that succeeded, 100 companies that failed. And he looked at the variables and said, hey, was it the experience of their CEO? Was it how much money they raised? Was it the size of the marketplace? What was it that led to their success? And what he does brilliantly is basically show you that a lot of the success is timing. Were they there at the right time? And so my takeaway is build a company that can live long enough to live forever, so that you're alive and doing well when the timing hits, right? I'm famously starting companies way too early. And the result is, therefore, I need to start a company that is revenue generating so that it's not dependent on constantly raising capital. Because if it is, then you're not going to be there when the timing is perfect. But if you've got something that's revenue generating, even if it's just the first phase of your vision, you can be around when you can pounce on the opportunity to go and, you know, go to, you know, phase 10 of your vision, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So final question, if you want to recap, where's the best place people can find out more about yourself, your work, everything that you've got going on across
Sure.
XPRIZE, everything. And we can wrap there.
Very kind of you to offer. First of all, this book, I'm very proud of it. It's called The Future is Faster Than You Think. If you go to, you know, www.futurefasterbook.com, at futurefasterbook.com, if you pre-order the book, there's a whole slew of massive benefits. You'll get a copy of Abundance and Bold, my first two books, which are the first two in the Exponential Mindset series, plus a whole slew of other elements. It's worth it to go and pre-order versus order it later. Diamandis.com, you can learn about all the companies. I'm very deep into the longevity world. I believe one of the most important things we can do is add 20 or 30 healthy years on our life, make 100 years old and use 60. And then I mentor entrepreneurs. I have a program called Abundance Digital. And if you go to abundance.digital, About 3,000 entrepreneurs. I'm on 4 webinars a month with them. We have an app that I mentor them in. So if people are interested in sort of this exponential abundance mindset, abundance.digital is where you'd go. So there you've got it. Thank you for your work. I'm grateful for it.
Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate your time. And yeah, we'll speak soon. Hope you have a fantastic day.
Hopefully next year this time.
Yep. Let's do it. Awesome. Have a good day, mate.
Bye.
Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.